Chapter 30. 1950 hours. November 3rd, 2552, military calendar. Zeta Doradus system, planet Onyx, near restricted region, zone 67. Kurt stood behind Kelly and Will in the Covenant dropship's cockpit. Kelly sat in the pilot's seat while Will manned the gunner station and watched the scanners. The other Spartans, Mendez and Dr. Halsey, were aft, readying equipment, waiting and watching. Kelly shifted back and forth. The pilot's seat was angled wrong for human physiology, and she leaned awkwardly over the control surface. She took the ship in low and fast over the jungle. The controls were an odd assemblage of holographic geometries that danced before her hands. Kurt tried to learn as much as he could in case he had to fly the alien ship. It was difficult, however, to watch her and not the view screens. The sun was a hand's breadth from the edge of the horizon, and the Covenant ship passed through long shadows and dim red light. As the jungle thinned, Kelly dropped and swerved between acacia trees, skimming 2 meters over the grassland. Without looking up from her controls, Kelly said, "Piece of cake, Elsie. Relax." She smoothed her hand over an acceleration stripe, and the ship leapt forward, zipping off the savanna and over the broken canyon lands. Kelly maneuvered aggressively, jinking up and down, performing quarter rolls to veer around mesas, dropping into ravines, and pulling up at the last instant to avoid a crash headlong into a wall. "Great," Kurt whispered to Kelly. He forced himself to release the edge of her seat. Dead ahead, the slope of a mountain angled gently up over 2,000 meters. "Nothing airborne on sensors," Will announced. "Clear sailing ahead." "Status on the warheads?" Kurt asked over the comm. Ash clicked on the channel. "All Fenris warhead detonators now secure and slave to our secure comm signal, sir. As ordered, 2 warheads cut down, armed and ready for transport. Working on the rest." "Hang on!" Kelly cried. The nose of the ship jerked up. A rock the size of a warthog tumbled down the mountain slope, clipping the undercarriage of the ship. The dropship spun, but Kelly expertly rolled, righted, and got them back on course. "Close," she muttered. "Rescan for surface motion," Kurt ordered Will. Will swept the camera angle port and starboard. Kurt saw they weren't on a single mountain. It was a range, all equivalent elevation, extending in a gentle arc as far as he could see. "Motion detected," Will said. "Just appeared, sir. Ahead. Got a target lock." A silhouette resolved on the viewscreen, outlined by the glare of the setting sun. Kelly came hard to port. As their relative angle changed, Kurt saw motion. Earth and rocks shot up and then cascaded down the slope. Will slid his hand over his controls and polarized the monitor, cutting the glare. The motion came from a collection of 30 interlaced sentinels, their booms and center spheres assembled into an oblong shape, and through its center traveled a continuous stream of stone. To Kurt, it looked like a mechanical worm regurgitating over the mountainside. Dr. Halsey clambered into the cockpit. "No energy spikes detected," Will said. "They're not ready to fire." Kurt swallowed. "Steady on this heading," he told Kelly. He watched the giant machine recede behind them. It had to have seen them. 30 sets of eyes wouldn't have missed something as large as a Covenant dropship. Why hadn't it attacked? Dr. Halsey tapped a control, and one of the view screens jumped back to the combined sentinels. She studied this a moment, and then declared, "Tinker Toys." "I don't understand the reference," Kurt said. "An ancient child's toy," she said. "Sticks and flat round connectors. These may be the Forerunner's counterpart. They reconfigured to accomplish various tasks, having all the required basic components. Anti-gravity units, force field generators, energy projector weaponry. It's the equivalent, I suspect, of the simple machines that comprise our technology. The wheel, the ramp, lever, pulley, and screw." Her casual analysis of a technology centuries more advanced than theirs irritated Kurt. "I'd say in this configuration," Dr. Halsey continued, It is not designed for combat and will not attack, unless, of course, they were provoked. Their programming, while sophisticated, appears dedicated. That is, each Sentinel combination specializes for a single task. And right now, that task is moving dirt.
Doesn't mean there aren't more combat pairs around, Kelly said. Order, sir?
Kurt detected the slightest edge of nervousness in Kelly's voice. He felt it, too, in the pit of his gut. If those 30 Sentinels back there had wanted to, they could have blasted this ship into shrapnel. There were only two options. Go forward, or retreat. Kurt felt like his luck had run dry, but he also felt like they were close to finding something. He longed for the days of simple missions, when there were only two things to worry about, maneuvering and where your team's lines of fire were. Yet when you broke it down to its components, forgot the consequences of success or failure, wasn't this mission the same as any other? Move and fire. Find a target to capture or neutralize. Minimize casualties while inflicting maximum damage on your enemy. Get in quick, get out quicker. New course, he told Kelly. Come 90 degrees to starboard. Take us up that mountainside.
Aye, sir.
The tuning fork-shaped dropship banked and raced up the slope. The earth vanished under them as they crested the summit. Beyond was a crater 100 kilometers in diameter. There were thousands of the earth movers on the inner slope, all spewing rocks over the edge. The Sentinels had created a giant anthill. How much, Kurt wondered, had ONI cleared in the decades they'd been here? And how much of this was the Sentinels doing? At lower elevations, there was nothing to see. The sun was too low and shadows pooled. Kurt boosted image enhancement on his heads-up display, and faint lines resolved, but nothing made sense.
Take us in closer, he whispered.
Kelly angled the ship down the interior slope, reducing their speed to 1/4. The clouds overhead lit with oranges and reds as the setting sunlight reflected off their undersides, and the crater interior glowed a faint amber. Kurt blinked, dazzled by what he saw. Mirror image clouds drifted upon angled surfaces and burned crimson and gold. As his eyes adjusted, he saw swirls and bands of other muted colors underlying the reflected images, green stripes and black and silver waves that appeared to be a tempest ocean frozen in place. He blinked once, twice, and then finally unraveled the optical illusion of patterns, colors, and shadow. There were pillars and arches, elevated aqueducts, columned temples with crowns of three-dimensional forerunner symbols. A forest of sculpted geometries of spheres, cubes, and tori. Roads that curved up and twisted into Mobius surfaces. It was a vast, alien city. Kurt shook his head clear and then recognized the material that constructed the city. He had seen it before, in tumbled, stripped river rocks and the slabs quarried from nearby Gregor Canyon. A rock so plentiful, this world had been named for it. Only the stuff in the crater had been polished to optical flatness, mirroring the sky with superimposed rainbow bands.
Onyx, he whispered.
Chalcedonic quartz with trace elementals enhancing their spectral variation, Dr. Halsey remarked. Scalloped columns rose from the crater floor to the mountainous summit, an elevation Kurt could only assume had been ground level before ONI began their excavation. As they maneuvered closer to one pillar, Kelly banked the ship around its curve, and Kurt saw reflected images of 1,000 different sunsets, all with varying cloud geometries, some with flocks of migrating birds or dinosaurs. Another had smears of blue spacecraft, and one burned with a supernova that illuminated the twilight. All images captured here. From the past? The future? Both? And only then did the scale of the structure register. It was 3 kilometers in diameter, larger than a UNSC carrier. Kurt's mind rebelled at the scale of this technology, the effort it had to have taken to construct such a thing. He glanced at Dr. Halsey. While she intently studied the viewscreen, she did not appear the slightest bit impressed.
You knew this would be here? He asked her.
I suspected, she said.
Frankly, after reviewing the reports of the halo structures, I am somewhat disappointed.
Bigger than the ruins under reach, Kelly said.
We did not discover the full extent of those ruins, Dr. Halsey replied, and likely never will.
She squinted at the monitor.
There, she said, pointing at a distant gleaming dome.
Can you move closer to that structure?
She turned to Kurt.
With your permission, Lieutenant Commander.
New heading, 025, Kurt said. Pick your best path.
New course.
Aye,
Kelly replied.
As they descended deeper, the dropship sped past a staircase that ascended to nowhere. Each step, a hectare of unbroken, polished stone.
The cloud-reflected light dimmed and the smooth surfaces melted into shadow.
Dr. Halsey's dome turned red-gold and faded to a silhouette.
Will turned the passive radar on the thing, and an outline overlaid the structure.
Kurt discerned that the top of the dome faceted into seven flat surfaces, each with a tall arch leading to the interior.
Those large enough to fly through? Kurt asked.
Will consulted his sensor screen.
Huge, he replied.
Move us in, Kurt told Kelly.
Aye, aye.
She pulled the nose of the ship up. As the last traces of light vanished, Kurt saw lights in the crater, red dots that swarmed over every surface. Sentinels.
Will's hands flashed over the sensor panel.
New energy signatures detected. Extremely low frequencies.
He looked up.
Over 100,000 distinct emitters, sir.
What configuration? Dr. Halsey asked.
Clusters, single units, or pairs?
Will studied the panel.
95% clusters, a few hundred single patterns, and a few hundred dual signatures.
Combat pairs, Kurt whispered.
Kelly, match their speed.
He keyed TeamCom and said, make ready for a hot drop. Battle-ready conditions.
Green status lights flashed back, confirming his order.
They decelerated over the darkening city, creeping toward the dome.
Kurt's instinct told him this was the right thing to do.
The logical, conscious portion of his mind, however, urged him to leave. He'd trust his gut on this one. Get them inside and undercover before every sentinel in the place fired on them.
Nice and easy, he said.
Kelly's hand hovered over the throttle stripe.
You think these things are smart enough to use our own tricks against us?
Lure us inside and then close the trap?
It's a possibility, he admitted. But I don't think they went to all the trouble to unearth this place just to blast it to bits.
He shrugged.
Just a hunch.
Kelly and Will glanced at each other.
Understood, Kelly said.
Approaching structure. 300 meters.
Back us in, Kurt said.
Their ship slowed, spun around, and eased toward one of the dome archways.
5 Covenant dropships could have fit through the opening with room to spare.
Inside, the blue glow of their engines illuminated the walls. The interior surfaces were angled and carved with star charts and the Forerunner hieroglyphics. Below, 7 flat surfaces, each the size of carrier landing decks, were evenly spaced.
Kelly set them down on one.
Kurt exited the dropship. Will followed him, and together they helped Dr. Halsey off.
The other Spartans took defensive positions around the ship.
Kurt's motion sensor showed everyone on deck, but there was nothing beyond the landing pad save darkness. Every noise was swallowed by the vast emptiness of the interior, and he felt as if he were drowning in shadows and silence. He initiated a single beam comm network and opened external audio so Dr. Halsey could hear them too.
We do this fast, he told his team. Olivia, Will, scout the perimeter of this landing pad. I want to report in 90 seconds on all routes and motion sensor hits.
Olivia and Will nodded and melted into the dark.
Linda, Fred, Mark, Holly, get grappling rounds, scale the dome, and take up lookout positions in the arches. Set up single beam relays and zip lines. Anything moves this way, sound the alarm.
Their status lights flashed green. Linda disappeared into the ship and returned with harpoon-like shafts and rope bags. She passed them out to the 3 other Spartans. They slid the rounds into their sniper rifles, aimed, and shot them through the archways overhead.
Braided monoline uncoiled, pulled by the grapple. They tested the lines, and then rapidly ascended the ropes.
Dante, Mendez, stay with the ship. Get our gear ready and loaded into balanced packs.
Dante's status light remained unlit for a full second in protest, and then it winked green. Mendez nodded, and they boarded the ship.
Kelly, Ash, Tom, Lucy, you're with me and Dr. Halsey. Ash, grab those cut-down nukes.
Ash moved into the dropship's cargo area and returned hefting a backpack.
Tom, Lucy, Kurt said, keep Dr. Halsey covered.
His senior NCOs stepped to either side of the doctor.
Got a staircase, sir, Will reported.
Goes through the floor and around the landing pad support pedestal.
No motion detected.
Roger, Kurt said.
Olivia, link up with Will.
Scout it out. We'll follow.
He oriented on Will's IFF tag and set a single beam relay antenna on the edge of the platform so he could keep in contact topside.
Kurt led his team to the stairs that helixed around the giant pedestal supporting the landing pad.
Kelly and Ash were right behind him. Tom came next, then Dr. Halsey, and Lucy on rear guard. Each stair step was spaced a quarter meter, but they fanned out from the pedestal 10 meters.
Kurt kept to the inner surface of the spiral, avoiding the darkness that lay beyond.
Dr. Halsey paused to examine the stone surface.
Lucy halted too, and the faint illumination of the tack lights on her spy armor reflected in the banded rock. She reached out and touched her image. There was translucence to the material that, for a moment, bounced reflections within the reflections, and an infinite number of Lucy's appeared, mirrored. She withdrew her hand, and they hastily continued.
After 3 revolutions around the support, Will's IFF tag appeared on Kurt's heads-up display.
A single-beam comm channel opened.
Chamber ahead, sir, Will reported.
With Forerunner symbols, I think.
Fred's voice broke over the comm.
We're in place. No incoming.
Eyes sharp, Kurt told Fred. Then to Will he said,
show me.
Will led them until stairs passed through a floor and stopped at an arched entrance.
Olivia crouched there, rifle out, covering the room beyond. The chamber was only 4 meters across.
After the agoraphobia-inducing space of the city, this room looked suffocatingly small.
Watch, Will said, and took a step inside.
Holographic Forerunner glyphs, dots, dashes, lines, and polygons, sprang from the stone floor and twisted around him.
With your permission, Lieutenant Commander, Dr. Halsey asked.
It's not dangerous, I assure you. I've seen similar control surfaces in the Halo mission logs.
Kurt didn't like a civilian leading, but Dr. Halsey was the expert here, as much of an expert as he had, at any rate.
Very well, Doctor, he said, but carefully.
Dr. Halsey made her way forward.
Stand perfectly still, she told him, and entered the room.
She tapped a tiny crystalline blue square. It blinked in response.
Still damn difficult to read, she muttered.
There is a simple two-dimensional translation, but I now see there are higher-dimensional interpretations.
She reached for her laptop.
There's no time for details, Kurt told her.
She frowned and put away her laptop.
All meaning is in the details, Lieutenant Commander.
She compressed her lips, concentrating on the symbols, and then she straightened.
This way.
She started to stride across the room, and the floor lit a brilliant blue before her, running directly into a blank wall.
Kurt set a hand on her arm, gently checking her motion. He then waved for Lucy and Tom to join him, and the 3 Spartans slowly walked ahead.
Dr. Halsey pointed to a small, slightly brighter blue dot on the wall.
Tom and Lucy took up firing positions on either side of him.
Kurt reached for the dot, ready for trouble.
The wall slid apart, and in the darkness beyond, a bridge of light flickered on, arcing into the distance.
Kurt told Olivia, stay here and relay signals topside.
She nodded.
Kurt paused at the wall, testing his weight on the semi-transparent bridge.
It held. He didn't like it, though. If the power cut out, this thing could vanish.
He moved 12 paces, with Tom and Lucy right behind him, although the distance covered by their steps didn't seem to match the much greater distance he perceived he was traveling along the curve of the bridge. He looked down, fathomless shadows. He kept his eyes straight ahead. When they got to the end of the bridge, a door of dazzling light appeared, and the shadows slid apart. Kurt, Tom, and Lucy passed through, not registering so much as a blip of enemy contact on their motion sensors. He found himself in a half-sphere chamber, 20 meters across. In the center was a console, over which metallic-hued Forerunner hieroglyphs swarmed. Kurt turned and motioned for Dr. Halsey to come along. She strode quickly across the bridge. Kelly, Will, and Ash hurried behind her, keen for any motion. They entered the room, and Dr. Halsey studied the hologram. "For lack of a better term," she said, "this is an information center." She ran her hands over the symbols on the console. "We should be able to find... ah." She tapped a tiny, flexing, triangular icon. A map. Light exploded around Kurt. Holographic geometry flashed and zoomed to a distant perspective, and a sphere of symbols, topology lines, and shapes swelled over the console until it touched the apex of the room. "A map?" Kurt asked. "Of our present location," Dr. Halsey said. "So this building is round?" Kelly asked. "Not precisely incorrect," Dr. Halsey replied. "We are in this building, and this building is in this city, which is technically on this so-called planet, but that view is backward. Observe." She rotated a golden circle symbol, and holographic structures passed through Kurt as the map expanded. A dot on the surface of the sphere magnified and resolved into lines and a grid, squares, triangles, and one circle. The view zoomed in upon that circle, and it tilted 90 degrees, showing depth and a faceted dome with seven arches. Dr. Halsey twisted the golden circular symbol, and the focus sharpened, descending through the layers of the building, showing the landing pad and the outline of the Covenant dropship with a blazing reactor core. Mendez and Dante appeared, and tiny biosigns displayed next to them. The view plunged deeper, and the room they stood in resolved, and Kurt watched himself, the other Spartans, and Dr. Halsey. "And back," she said as she spun the circle icon. The room shrank to building, to city, and back to the large sphere construct. The scale of it finally clicked in Kurt's mind. Once he understood, it took him a few seconds to again speak. "When you said the Forerunner translation for Onyx was Shield World," he whispered, "that was a literal translation, wasn't it?"
"Apparently so," Dr. Halsey agreed. "The entire planet is artificial, like the Halo rings."
Something caught her attention on the console. She tapped a blue octahedron.
"Could it be?" she whispered.
The map shifted once more, through the surface of the world, deep into the crust, and revealed a chamber full of machinery and eight oblong pods that shimmered with energy fields. Within were human bodies, translucent, their features like specters. Next to each pulsed the trace of their heartbeats.
"That's Katana," Ash said and took a step closer. "At least five of the people in those things. They vanished in Zone 67. Before this all started."
"We've got to get them out," Kurt said. "Doctor, find me a route to that location. Kelly, Ash, get the medical kits from the ship and..."
Dr. Halsey held up one hand.
"One moment, Lieutenant Commander." She touched a dot.
The map of Onyx receded to a meter across, and stars winked upon the map room walls.
A tiny Covenant destroyer appeared in orbit. Then another. And another, until 24 ships had flashed into normal space from slipspace. Kelly muttered, "Out of the frying pan."
Kurt's mind raced. They could still do this. Rescue Team Katana and get out of here. But they couldn't just leave and give the Covenant the technology on Onyx. There were the Fenris warheads. But if he detonated them all, it wouldn't even destroy a tiny fraction of this planet.
"We've got incoming,"
Fred's static-filled voice crackled over the comm.
"Sentinels!"
How many?
Sir, all of them.